Hi, Drew and Jonathan Scott here. American Family Insurance can help protect your dream home for whatever comes next. You can live in your own oasis or your own clubhouse. Whatever you choose, get the right coverage. Save up to 23% by bundling home and auto. Life's better when you're under American Family's roof. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. Products not available in every state. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies. 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
Hey, everybody, we are getting towards the end of December, but we are giving you a Christmas present early because this will be actually maybe only the second interview from this person, but it is going to be one of the most important ones. And so we're going to deviate from our normal way that we do things because this one is way too important. So, hey, guys, welcome back. It's Game of Crimes. I'm Morgan, accompanied by my partner in crime.
Murph's here with you.
Yeah. And head on over to that Apple Spotify, hit the 5 stars. You're going to want to do that for this episode because it's going to tug at your heartstrings. It's going to make you mad. It's going to make you sad. And it's going to make you grateful that people like this exist in the world. So,
no kidding.
Yeah. And just head on over to our website, gameofcrimespodcast.com. That's where we have, a lot of our information, including our books, especially from the one we just did last week, Breaking Blue by Sean Sticks Larkin. So that information will be there. Follow us on that thing they call social media at Game of Crimes on Twitter, Game of Crimes Podcast on Facebook and the Instagram. But join us at Patreon, patreon.com/Game of Crimes. We have a ton of content there. We have more content there than we have on our free podcast. Our Q&A came out. We've got You Can't Make This Shit Up that's coming out. Our Narcometer review. We do 911, What's Your Emergency? So a lot of good stuff there. So join us there, patreon.com/Game of Crimes. But you also got to join our fan group, Game of Crimes fans, run by our favorite mafia queen, Sandy Salvato, rules with the Iron Fist and the Velvet Glove. Head on over there because there'll be special things posted. We get involved in discussions. We have all sorts of things. But the one thing we don't have this week, and we're not going to do, because this is not an episode where we're going to have this. We have a couple laps, but this is a very serious episode, Murph. So let's kind of set this up because you and I both had the honor of meeting him and his partner. But even though there's 5 people involved in this, a lot of people are going to recognize the 2 people. So we met them down at the Southern California Gang Conference.
We did, and we're talking about Mike Collazo and Rex Engelbert with the Nashville Metropolitan Police Department. And you're all familiar with the Covenant school shooting that happened a couple years ago there in Nashville. The response by the Nashville police was quick, immediate, and aggressive, and it's successful. We still had 6 victims, and that's why we're doing away with any hilarity on today's show. You will hear us talking with Mike here, and a couple little funny things come up, but what Morgan said, have some tissues ready because this did get a little bit emotional for Mike talking about it. This is, like Morgan said, this is the only second time that he's given an interview on this, and Nashville Police Department authorized it. So we're not going behind anybody's backs. The only reason we didn't have Rex on here with him is because he was on his honeymoon. So Rex, if you hear this, congratulations, brother.
But we think it's narrow-minded you didn't join your partner on the podcast, but we're going to let it slide this time.
Yeah, I mean, you could have called in from the honeymoon suite or wherever you are, but maybe next time. But this is, I grew up just south of Nashville, Murfreesboro, till I was going into high school. And oh my gosh, that we've seen so many shootings going on around the country, but we've seen excellent responses from agencies, law enforcement agencies, and we've seen very questionable responses. So if you're wondering what the difference is, what you're getting ready to hear is the way it should be done. Hats off to Mike, to Rex, to the whole team that responded that day, to the entire Nashville Police Department. You're going to hear how Mike doesn't take credit. He wants to give credit. I mean, he gives high praise to the trainers with the Nashville Police Academy. He gives high praise to the command staff and the chief there at Nashville. High praise to the residents of Davidson County, Tennessee, where Nashville is. It's a metropolitan government there. Just the response that he got. So rather than us telling you what he's talking about, why don't we just get started on this one, Morgan? What do you say?
Yeah, and actually, I have just one quick question. It was actually March of this year, March of 2023. So
it seems like it's so much farther back.
No, because we've talked to these guys. Like I said, yeah, it does seem like that. And but again, it's like it. What's amazing about it? It's normally you have to wait years to get a story like this out, but they were able to allow them to talk. And you're going to see there's a couple ground rules we have to set, which is cannot talk about the manifesto. And don't, so people don't get wrapped around the axle. That's Nashville PD's, Metro PD's rules that says, hey, because they're still on the job, they're still active duty, so they can't. And plus that, it's involved in ongoing litigation. When it's released publicly, that's one thing. But really, it's not relevant for the story of today, because the story of today is about a collection of officers who responded to the call nobody ever wants to hear about. Nobody wants to respond to, but you train for it. And let me tell you what, you're going to be proud to know the training they did and what they did.
Yeah, and as you've heard us do in the past, and you'll hear Mike okays this, we've dedicated today's episode to the six victims from this shooting, Evelyn, Haley, William, Cynthia, Catherine, and Mike. So sorry for what happened to you. Three of you were 9 years old. If I keep talking about this, I'm going to get emotional again, but
yeah,
our thoughts and prayers are with the families. I just wish I had words of encouragement for you.
Yeah, well, let's dispense with our regular thing, too, because this is not something we want to make light of. So, hey, guys, everybody, hang on. Here comes the interview with Michael Coyazzo, and then stay tuned afterwards for our debrief. We'll talk about a couple things there, but let's get into it now. When I say this next guest, it's a high honor to have him on. We're not kidding on this one. We truly mean that. We met him and one of his partners when we were at the Southern California Gang Conference. And Murph, I would say that out of that, this has been one of the episodes I've been looking forward to for a long time.
Absolutely. And this is, you're all familiar with the Covenant School shooting in Nashville. It was the body cam video really opened up what really took place up there once you guys got upstairs. But shout out to our buddy Mel Sosa and Santi out in San Diego for making the introduction. I love it. You're smiling when you say that, Mike. But ladies and gentlemen, it's our honor to have Mike Coyazzo with Metro PD out of Nashville, Tennessee with us today. Mike, welcome, brother.
Hey, thanks for having me. Yeah, I know you said I was smiling when you said Mel. Mel's probably one of the greatest dudes I've ever met.
He is. He's fantastic, isn't
yeah.
he?
Yeah.
And that was fun, too, being out there, too, because getting to meet you guys. And, well, first of all, we got to let everybody know. First of all, it's Detective Murph. Detective, like I was. Detective.
I was going to let it slide.
Mike could be detective. You were defective.
Yeah, well, the defective detective, remember, I can tell you some of the guys who couldn't make it onto DEA. Anyway, we digress. But hey, first of all, congratulations, because Mike, you just had another addition to the family.
A couple of days ago, had a little baby girl on the 27th.
Excellent. Well,
congrats. And so that was, so when did your wife get pregnant then? 9 months earlier was about?
I would say February-ish.
Yeah. So,
I think it's getting a little too personal here. Come on.
No. What I'm saying is there's a lot of stuff going on, 'cause that goes into the story, because what we're going to talk about happened on March 27th, 2023. And then your other partner that was involved, that actually one of the people that was involved in shooting, Rex, he's actually took PTO, or he's off because he just got married, right?
Correct.
So congratulations to Rex too, man. You guys are just, you two got it going on out there.
Say life hits you when it hits you, and it goes.
Well, yeah, and I just want to say also that at the beginning of this interview that Nashville PD approved Mike and Rex to be on. Of course, we're not going to call Rex on his honeymoon, so have a good time there, brother. But it was with the understanding that we would not discuss the manifesto or comments made by the shooter. And that bitch, we're not even going to mention her name, Mike, just no. So you know, she deserves no recognition. This is all about you, Rex, and what you guys did and your story. So
I appreciate that.
So for all our listeners out there, when you're wondering why we didn't ask about the manifesto, now you know.
Well, and look, rules are rules, and you folks don't have to like the rules, but look, Rex, Mike, and your other partners, everybody else, there was five of you, I think, or six of you?
Five
of you? Five. you know, look, they're still on the job, so we're not going to put anybody's mm-hmm. job in danger by trying. And we're not muckraking journalists either. This isn't about doing gotcha stuff. So we're going to follow the rules. But I will ask you, though, I know you guys have been cleared, but is this your first podcast interview you've done?
No. So I actually did one a little while ago with one of my good buddies, Zach. He runs Veteran with a Sign. And he just started a podcast called After Action. So we went and spoke with him for a little while. And his is pushed towards mental health and ensuring that, you know, everyone's getting taken care of on the law enforcement side, along with any first responder at that, but also the military in general. He runs a great program and a great organization.
And towards the end of the interview today, we want to touch on wellness also and what Nashville Metro PD has set up.
Yeah,
because our previous episode that just came out, actually, Michael Martinez, this dude, San Diego PD, in the first 18 months he was on the job, he was involved in 3 shootings, ended up being involved in a total of 4 within 2 years, 3 of them fatal. And that was his thing. He had a big issue with how to handle it, the drinking and a lot of the stuff that went on it. So wellness is a huge issue. But as we do with everybody, Detective Michael Collazo, this thing of ours, how did you get started in this thing of ours? Because I know at one time, and I'm going to salute you too, my son-in-law was a Marine formerly on active duty. So you ended up in the military before the police. So how did that journey happen for you?
It's kind of funny. It was kind of, I don't want to say it was a spur of the moment, but it was just me.
Did it involve alcohol?
No, it was just me and a bunch of friends in high school. We were close-knit together, just a group of us. And as time kind of went on towards the end of graduation, we were kind of getting to that point where we're trying to figure out what we wanted, like how we wanted to start our lives. We didn't know what we wanted to do yet, but we knew we wanted to do what we could or go where we needed to go. And at that point, we all kind of just got together and was like, hey, let's go join the Marine Corps. I had actually gotten a scholarship to go to college through the state with the lottery scholarship that they had at the time with my GPA and along with my ACT score. So I was kind of torn at the moment with my buddies who wanted to all go active duty or do this and that when joining the Marine Corps. And I spoke with my family and we kind of decided at that point with me having the possibility of going to college, let's do the reserve route. So I know you said you had a family member that had joined the Marine Corps active duty. I actually ultimately went into the Marine Corps and enlisted as a reservist just so I could also go to college.
Well, still, you served our country. By the way, when you talk about your GPA and your ACT, my guess is you were quite overqualified to be in the Marines. So why'd you pick the Marines, man?
I mean, I think we all know why, because they're probably the – I'm not going to say probably. I mean, they are the best branch out there. They challenge you, and I wanted to challenge.
Well, that no doubt about that, man. They challenge you. So what year did you get out of high school then?
I graduated 2009.
So you get out, and then so do you go right to the reserves and go to basic before you end up going to college?
No. So what I ended up doing was, so after graduation, I had already been accepted to college. I enlisted into the Marine Corps. Did the application, swore that I'd go, went through the MEPS program. After MEPS, immediately was sent to boot camp, did boot camp. After boot camp and graduation, you earn your title and you become a Marine. Everyone else went off to whatever trade school they were going for their MOS. In my circumstance, I returned home and started my first semester of college. So my first year, because you do your first 2 semesters, and then the following summer, I then was to go back to my school training through the Marine Corps. At that same time, I'm still going to the reserve unit, checking in, going to drill every month while still going to college, and then I just split my training up so I could do both.
Did you grow up in Nashville?
I did.
And where'd you go to college at?
So I started off at Motlow State. And then transferred over to Middle Tennessee State University. And after all that, I ended up, what we'll get to later, is joining the police department and going on my career there.
Got it. I grew up down in Murfreesboro.
That's what I heard.
Yeah, so MTSU was MTSC. That's how long ago it was.
Oh, it's grown dramatically down here.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, my sister and her family. Well, my sister passed away earlier this year, but they were still living in Murfreesboro.
Okay, yeah. Murfreesboro's changed dramatically over 10, 15 years.
Oh yeah, it was a small town. When we lived there, I-24 wasn't even there. You had to come up, was it Murfreesboro Highway, Murfreesboro Pike, whatever they call that road.
Was that by covered wagon, Murph? Did you take the hook up?
No,
the
we took our horses. We used the horses back then.
Horses, okay, good.
And bicycles were pretty popular. It just took you a while to get there.
Mm. I don't think I'd ride a bicycle down Murfreesboro Pike right now.
Oh, heck no, man. Heck no. Hey, well, look, a couple things. So, one, what did you study in college? And number two, when you went for your advanced training in the Army, we called it AIT. But what would you study in college? And then what did you go through? What was your advanced training for the Marines? What were you going to get a specialty in? What was your MOS?
Yeah, so I kind of had an idea what I wanted to do outside of the Marine Corps after graduating from boot camp. Wanted to kind of stay in that realm of things. So kind of knew I would go into law enforcement. I just didn't know what agency or where at. So when I went to college, you know, the first couple years you have to get your basics done and then you can start going into your major. But I ultimately decided that I was going to go for my criminal justice degree. So that was already set in stone. And then when I enlisted in the Marine Corps, I'd went in knowing that I was just going to go ahead and be in the infantry. I mean, it was backbone. It's the backbone of the Marine Corps. So I was like, that's what we're going to go with.
Hey, where you were at though, since you were going to college, did you consider joining ROTC? Did they have that available at your college?
I didn't. I kind of wanted to write my own path and do my own thing. Okay. I was a little hard headed.
No kidding. Okay. Go figure. Again, well, there you go. Then you are perfectly qualified to be a Marine then. So I just have to ask you one question. When you play with your other kid, do you tend to dominate the use of the crayons and stuff?
Okay. First off, that's at dinner time. No. All right. Keep him coming.
You can give him the one finger salute anytime. I do multiple times.
I heard the Army one. I'm just trying to be nice right now. I've got a lot of friends that are in the Army. I don't want to be mean.
Okay. Well, we'll wait for the Army Navy game. We'll see what happens.
There we go.
All right. Hey. Well. Did you complete then all 4 years? Did you do it in 4 years then?
No. So, you know, it's probably one of my biggest regrets is I ultimately stopped after about year three. I ended up getting the offer for the police department, and I said, hey, let's just jump on it right now. I haven't gone back. Again, it's one of the biggest regrets I've had in my life. I had a couple of them, but not finishing up my degree is one of them. I'll go back one day, but family comes first right now. You know, like we said earlier, just had another little girl, so that's my priority. Maybe when they get a little bit older and time kind of levels out, I can go back and finish it. I'm close to it. I'll get there. Yeah. I'm stubborn.
Well, actually, I think you did finish college because I'm reading an article right now where you and your buddies were
my professor.
Honorary professors of public safety by MTSU.
I mean, I can we'll see what happens. I'll submit that to the department, see if they'll recognize that for a percentage increase.
Good luck.
Yeah.
Good luck.
We'll see. I put it on my signature on my email. Will that count?
Absolutely. I put Dr.
Dr. Koyazu on there, you know, Dr. C. So now, did you apply anywhere else other than Nashville?
I did. Let me backtrack on that. I didn't actually apply, but I did go to a couple of the local departments in the Middle Tennessee area, Laverne, Smyrna, Murfreesboro. Kind of went and reached out to all of them, but Nashville's the one that stuck out.
Why?
Big city, small town atmosphere, squared away. Here's my jab at the Army. In the Marine Corps, you know, we want to look presentable. We want to look nice. Our uniforms are the best. Our training's the best. We get treated the best.
Worst.
but we're the backbone of, you know, the armed forces. And when I went and did the whole walk through with the police department there and seeing everything, they're the ones that stuck out like that to me. When you looked at all the other agencies, and there's nothing wrong with any other agencies, they're all great. We work with them every day now. Every time I'm out there, there's something going on in Mount Juliet or Hendersonville where we're working in conjunction with each other. It was just Nashville stuck out to me just like the Marine Corps stuck out to me. You'd see the officers dressed really nice. You'd see with their shiny shoes on. And I was just like, this was still in my mindset coming from the Marine Corps, and it was the more professional organization to me, and that's what drew me to them.
You know, and for our listeners here, we only record audio, but we actually do these interviews on video so we can see each other. And you should have seen Morgan squirming in his chair when Mike was talking about the arc.
All I could think of, this sounded like Ricky Bobby. Yeah, I wake up in the morning and I piss excellent.
I mean, I told you I was going to jab it.
Yeah, that's okay, man. Hey, we can take it. Look, if you can't take it, you're in the wrong job, right? So,
yep.
But I got to tell you, Nashville's a favorite place of mine, too. I got a buddy of mine that actually is a guitarist for Carrie Underwood. So he lives there and works there, records there. I had the chance to play a friend of mine. Her husband was a professional musician. We did some jam sessions all up and down.
Well, you need to call that young man and tell him we won't carry on here. She got nothing to do with law enforcement, but man. I'd love to have her on a podcast.
I don't know. I don't know if I can pull that, but I'll ask him. You know, we'll see. So, but no. So now let's talk too about Nashville Metro, because that's kind of a your department. It's not like a city PD quite, right? So, what does Nashville Metro mean? How far out do you cover? Talk about the county and stuff. How big is the department?
So, I don't want to give you the exact year. Well before my time, it used to be Nashville PD. Started off with just the city. Got together, votes happened. Ultimately, they decided as a county that they wanted to be a metropolitan. So it became a metropolitan Nashville Police Department, and not just covering Nashville, but covering all of Davidson County. So we do have the Davidson County Sheriff's Department, and then we have the Metro Nashville Police Department. Davidson County Sheriff's Department primarily focuses on the jails. And the civil aspects of things that occur in our county as we handle the criminal side. And again, we take care of the whole county. You have Berry Hill, you have Belmead, Nashville itself, all within this one county. Do
any of these smaller towns, any of these smaller jurisdictions have their own PDs?
Yeah, so Berry Hill still has a small agency. So does Belmead. Vanderbilt's also within our area with the university. They have their own police department, and so is TSU, Tennessee State University. They have their own small agency or campus PD within there that also falls in Davidson County. But with us, I mean, I think our department, with the size of our county and how many people have moved to our city, we're understaffed on it, but I'll tell you, we're sitting at probably around anywhere between 1,200 to 1,500 officers.
Wow. And I know the housing prices are going through the roof out there. I mean, you're even talking to getting out by Franklin. You
yeah.
Know, stuff is growing, isn't it?
Yeah. I remember when I came on the department, it hadn't started yet, but over the years, I mean, you can't find a house near downtown Nashville for anything less than $500,000.
So what's driving the growth?
It's an amazing city. Let's be honest.
Wake up in the morning and piss excellent.
I mean, every time you see something that's going on, it's somehow related to Nashville, in my opinion. Like country music, we're the honey hole for country music. Everybody comes to Nashville to write their songs, to produce their songs, and to perform their songs. We have what? Grand Ole Opry. We have the Ryman. Bridgestone, Titan Stadium. I mean, I can't tell you how many artists have came down here, and they're amazing experiences. So it's just a booming city. And I kind of said it earlier, but with Nashville, it is a big city, but it has that small town atmosphere where everybody knows everybody. And everybody's in everybody's business, of course. but like when the incident occurred, I can't tell you how many people from the Nashville community that I've idolized and I've looked up to and I've grown up, you know, just watching on TV, reached out because they knew somebody that was related to the school or they knew somebody that was involved somehow, some way. And that just showed that big city, small town atmosphere.
Well, it shows the community coming in to support the first responders as well. And that's, you know, that's getting more and more common after, you know, all the defund the police bullshit that went on before. So it's reassuring. And on top of everything else, Middle Tennessee is just a great place to live.
Oh, 100%. I mean, it's not East Tennessee. Don't get me wrong. I love Knoxville. That's where I want to end up at eventually. But Middle Tennessee is number two.
You're not a UT fan, are you?
Yeah, 100%.
How'd I know that?
Yeah. I tell you one thing I love too about Nashville too. You go down the strip there and hit all those bars and listen to those bands playing. I learned this a long time ago, but none of those bands get paid. They all work for tips. Mm-hmm. And I'm telling you, it's like pro golfers. They say the only difference between amateurs and pros sometimes is like maybe a stroke and a half. Yeah. The only difference between some of these bands and the talent and being professionals, I think, is just being heard by the right people. There is so much amazing music, you know, up and down the strip, and they're so good at it too.
I'm telling you what, though, I was in Nashville a couple months ago for a law enforcement conference, and they can need to just bring a street sweeper down Broadway and scrub that place because it literally stinks.
I'll tell you that our public work guys, I work with a lot of them whenever we, because I'm also on our search and rescue, which incorporates some of our public work folks that come out with us. I mean, those guys, they are down there after every event. They're down there busting their butt. It's crowded. There's a lot of turnover. There's a lot of people coming and going, and it's hard to keep on top of. But those dudes work their butt off.
Yeah, there's a lot of peeing going on the street too.
We try to enforce that. We try to stop it.
Well, so let's talk about your journey now into law enforcement. So you get the offer from Nashville Metro. When'd you start?
2013.
And so tell us about your academy, you know, getting on. How long did it take you to get on, and what, you know, what's your academy like?
So I got lucky. Again, when I said when I was going to college and I hadn't finished it, I got the offer. I was while I was in the Marine Corps in the reserve side, I jumped on some orders and things. All the stars were starting to line up just right. And when I got a phone call in 2013 saying that I'd been accepted, I was coming off some active duty orders with the Marine Corps. And I just ultimately decided, hey, time, it just lined up too good. I've got to go. I can go back to school at a later time. I don't know when this opportunity will come back to join the police department. So I took it. Started the academy in October of 2013, just right after I got off the active duty orders. And I think our academy was a couple months long. It is a stress inoculation, which I'm a fan of. Had coming from the boot camp Marine Corps, that is a very stress inoculation. So I was...
you were used to it.
Yeah, it wasn't a big shell shock like it was for some folks that were with us, but it was well needed.
So you said you came off active duty orders. What were you doing during that
time? I jumped on some orders locally just to assist our active duty component that was that was attached to our unit, just helping them out with administrative things that were going on at the time. It was just for a couple months.
Were some of them deployed?
No, I did not deploy.
Yeah, but I mean, but the other elements you said of the active duty unit, did you have some folks out of the unit downrange or overseas?
Not at that time, no. This was just could have been from any reasons, but it was just to fill some vacancies that they had at that moment in time, just to help out the needs.
You know, it's a friend of ours that's been on the show here before, Kevin Black's police officer, 30-year veteran police officer in North Carolina. Real stud. We had him here on the show. I used to work with him when I was stationed in North Carolina with DEA. And he just retired after 30-year service, and he put out, hell, he put out his own manifesto today on Facebook. I read through it; looked like War and Peace. But he says in there he's thanking all the people that, you know, worked with him during his career and all that. And he said, for those of you that I hurt your feelings, grow a pair or go get another job. You gotta love the guy.
And this is Kevin, the guy who shit his pants and didn't tell anybody about it for 6 months. Yeah.
But we told all the geos, all the Game of Crimes listeners, he told them actually.
Oh, well, we'll have to tell you that story too again.
I was gonna say that. Yeah, we gotta figure that one out.
Well, they came from an arrest. He crapped his pants and he didn't know what to do, so he hid the pants, or he hid something anyway, but people come in, God, this smells, and he blamed it on the prisoner. And okay. Only did he fess up, you know, 6 months later. I think it was me. He did.
He just finally told everybody, or it came out on his podcast.
Eventually.
He fessed up.
And for our listeners, it's episode
86. He finally told the truth on it.
Which episode was it again, Murph?
Episode 86, if you want to go back and listen to Kevin Black. Yeah, it's hilarious.
Kevin's got a great story. He was adopted, and his adoptive parents didn't want to give him up, but they had to, and they were only a county over. So it's a great story. But anyway, let's talk about you, because that's why we have you on here. So you go through the academy. So how does that work when you get out? I mean, you're going through training. You got your FTOs phase, so you're training. So what part of the city are you in? Are you guys rotating through the whole, you know, the metro area?
Yeah, so our academy being a couple months long, stress inoculation. Our academy is also different than the state academy. So Metro being Metro and a huge agency, we have our own police academy internally. Everywhere else in the state tends to send folks to the state academy. The state academy, you stay the night. It's kind of just like any military boot camp where you stay the night. You can go home on the weekends, though, with them, and then you come back on that following Monday. For us, we went home every night. That was its own stress factor, I can tell you, because you go home and you just think about it like, is this worth it? You know, I got homework I got to do. I got to get my uniform ready. You know, I got home at 7, 8 o'clock at night. I got to turn around and wake up, be back at 5, 6 in the morning. 24, traffic's horrible. Doesn't matter what time of day it is. So I got to add an extra couple hours to get into work. So, you know, those were big factors, but pushed through, graduated. Once I graduated, I went through our FTO phase. That's a couple months in of itself. We did 4 rotations at the time. Each rotation was on a different shift at a different precinct with a different FTO. So you got a hodgepodge of training and experience through your FTOs brought out to you for you to just to pick little pieces from and develop yourself or develop what type of officer you want to be or what you're going to come out to be eventually. So I started off my very first rotation in our West precinct, which covered most of West Nashville. Charlotte Pike, White Bridge, and that was on day shift, which is a different breed in of its own of itself. My second rotation, I was moved out to our East Precinct, which covered East Nashville, you know, Five Points, Gallatin Road, Douglas, South Douglas, Main Street. Did that one on our afternoon shift, which when I say day shift and afternoon shift, day shift at that time was like 6:30 in the morning to 2:30 in the afternoon. Afternoon shift was 2:30 to 11. And then after that rotation, I moved to our C detail, our night shift downtown in our central precinct, which covers Broadway, Demumbrian, the city life or the party life down there. Did that one on midnight, and midnight was 11 o'clock at night to about 6:30 in the morning. So you had constant rotation on those 3 shifts. After that shift, or after that rotation with that FTO, I was moved out to our Hermitage precinct, which covers our Hermitage area in Nashville. That's more kind of like on the southern side.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week.
Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
Near where like the airport is, but that was also on our day shift. So I started on our day shift, went to afternoons, afternoons to midnights, midnights back to day shift where I got cut loose. Around the time that I got cut loose from our FTO program and was out on my own as a brand new officer, we opened up our 8th precinct, being the Midtown Hills precinct. Just like anything else, the needs of the department. So I thought I was going to be a taken care of brand new officer, had just been cut loose on my own, working day shift, nice precinct. Had the golden ticket at the moment until I got that phone call and saying, hey, the police department needs you at Midtown, needs you on the afternoon shift. So that's where you're going when the precinct opens. See you. Bye.
Bend over.
Now, were you married at the time?
I was. Yes.
Okay. Any kids at that point?
No, sir. No. So, yeah. Well, me and my wife, we got together. Oh, wow. It's been a while. It's been a lot. Now that you got me doing some math on this.
I'm sorry. For Marines, I get that.
I'll help you out. I got you. I graduated school. No. So me and my wife got together, what, 2010? So this was, what, 2013? So we've been together for about 4 or 5 years at that point. But yeah, so she stuck through all that with me, and that's tough on her too. The shift change, the days changing, because every time I left from a different FTO, I was put on their schedule. So you might have an FTO that had Friday, Saturday off. You might have an FTO that had Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. It just changed. But we worked through it. We pushed through all that. I got cut loose, moved from day shift to evening shift. I was the brand new officer, so I didn't get the best of days off. Did that for a couple of years, but again, like anything else, you put your time in, you work, you show your work ethic. It shows. Your supervisors see that. They show like, hey, these officers actually want to work. These officers are, you know, putting that time in, and you get things in return. I got good days off eventually. I got a take home car that just for commuting purposes to help out. I mean, that was a huge boost for us at the time. Having a take home car.
Officers have to, or is everybody assigned a car now, or is it still?
We're getting there. I would venture to say right now, 95% of officers on our department have a vehicle that is assigned to them, whether they take it home or they park it at the nearest precinct to help their commute.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, that makes a huge difference too, because the metro area, I mean, that's the, like you say, between traffic and stuff. If you've got to go from one side to the other, I mean, no such thing as a short drive, you know, during rush hour, right?
Oh, no, not at all.
So let's talk about going through this now. So now when you were on shifts, do you bid for shifts, or how do those things get assigned? Seniority.
Yep. So when I got cut loose, it was, hey, no, this is what the department needs, because we were just opening up a brand new precinct. We were expanding and we're about to expand again. We're about to get a ninth precinct just because of how huge Nashville's becoming. We need another precinct with more officers to help take care of the community. But at the time, I'd been just cut loose. Every 2 years, we did a rotation bid where, depending on where you're at, whether you're in patrol, if you were on a flex team or a crime suppression unit or precinct investigations, or if you were outside of what we call our community service bureau, if you were within our investigative service bureau, you could bid for where you wanted to go. If you wanted to leave our investigations and you wanted to go back to the streets and be in patrol, you would come back, or you could apply to come back, or not apply. You could just say, hey, I want to go back into the bid. And you would bid what precinct, what zone, or what precinct and what shift you wanted to be on. And that was all based off of seniority. And they broke it all. They always break it down. Lieutenants bid amongst themselves. Our sergeants bid amongst themselves. The FTOs bid amongst themselves. And then your officers bid amongst themselves. And it's all allocated, you know, math. I can't do math. I think I just showed that with trying to figure out how long me and my wife have been together.
You know, when you said you were married for 3 years, met her in 2010, you know, got married and graduated in 2013. So I think it was 4 or 5 years.
Yeah. Anyway. Hey, it works, right? No, the computer does that, right? Our analysts do that for us. They figure out, hey, calls for service, how many officers are needed at this precinct, how many zones are needed, how many officers need to fill those zones, and that those are what allocate that amount of resources going to that precinct at the time.
The analysts are the brains, and
yes.
the officers are the brawn.
Yes. Every good case that is out there, and correct me if I'm wrong, y'all know this, every good case has a really good case detective, but has an analyst behind that case detective that handles it.
But that's the best team you can ever get. If you can get those two that get along, that's the best investigative team you ever have.
Well, and I was wishing back in the day, because I started in 82, I was on midnights for 6 months, because there was, you know, you were just the new guy. But I thought life would be better going to the state patrol. But at that time, it was 6 days on, seven on, three off. But you worked the first 3 days were nights. So I would go to work at Friday night at a 6 p.m. work till 3 a.m. Saturday, the same thing. Sunday, work 4 to 1. I'd be in Monday at 9 a.m., work till 5. Tuesday, work from 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. And Wednesday, I'd go to work at 0500, get off at 2 p.m. And that, I mean, you're going to bed, or, you know, you're going to work about the same time you're going to bed just 6 days ago. And that screwed with sleep. That's one thing I think law enforcement has finally learned. Some of the people may not like the shifts, but if you can get used to it, even rotating every 30 days was tough. I remember on the police department, you'd rotate every 30 days, you know, on days, then you go to midnights, then you go to afternoons. It's like, man, this just screws with your sleep.
Oh, we got lucky. We're right now, I'm still on 5/8. We've started a transition into the 10s where we'll do 4/10s. But there's no rotation. There's no changing of days off within a month period. And I like it. I like having that set schedule that, you know, hey, I'm working 5 days this week, and my days off are Saturday, Sunday, and that's it. I'm not changing it every 2 months or every month. I get confused.
Well, and especially when you start talking about childcare, and if the wife's working, or yeah, you know, and it's just trying to arrange. When my wife was working at the police department, we'd be working. I mean, I'd be going to work, she'd be coming home. We'd have to, you know, fill the gap for a while. I mean, it's a tough. People don't realize in a lot of professions when you got shift work. Childcare is one of the biggest issues of being married. Oh my God.
If we need just some stabilization.
Need something stable, because I certainly wasn't.
The biggest challenge in your marriage is your wife putting up with your crap every day, man.
I know, man. Well,
it's every marriage.
36
That's why
years.
She had lets me play with him here on the podcast.
That's just so she gets her own time.
That's right.
Yep. Yeah, that's right. So I get me time, go out to the she shed and do all that good stuff.
Yep.
There you go.
Right. All right, so let's start kind of working into this. So how long are you on patrol before you get your next assignment, before you can move up into something different?
Yeah, so I did our patrol for just a couple of years, was not selected but asked to go to our flex team.
What is a flex team?
So our flex team back then was a proactive unit within the precinct, within the shift. So every precinct had three flex teams, A, B, and C. I was asked to go to our C flex team, which was on nights. And we were
that's still a uniform job.
Yeah, still uniformed. But we were in unmarked Impalas, unmarked Tauruses, and we were kind of just at the rim of the department, at the precinct. Whatever needs the precinct had, we would go address. If it was, hey, we saw a spike of deaths from motor vehicle, or we've seen a spike of robberies occurring within our precinct, they'd ask us to go out there and try to enforce any violations that we could come about and try to find who is committing these crimes, but in a uniform capacity. So I did that for a couple of years.
And I think when we were in San Diego talking about this, wasn't one of the details, or maybe that was Rex, but going down to Broadway and hitting all the bars on the flex team or?
Yeah, so that would have been with Rex. That would have been, he was one of our bike officers downtown.
Okay.
And that was what he primarily focused on when he was in Central.
Okay. I just wanted to keep it clear. So you're working on the flex team, so you guys are kind of like proactive. So was that considered a promotion or just an assignment?
Just a lateral move.
Okay.
And that's where it's crazy. So in patrol, you in our department, you're by yourself. We don't double up cars. We're single officers in a vehicle. Now, majority of our calls require two officers to respond. But when I transition over to the flex team, that's where that team atmosphere came about, where it was a small group. It was, well, I think at that time it was six of us. So you had six officers and one sergeant, and that was your team. And we worked together. So we were always with each other. If we were going to go to an area, we went as a team. It wasn't just one individual going over to Nolensville Pike and Haywood Lane by themselves. We all went, and we just worked together. And that's where it was a big transition from patrol, where you're used to working by yourself, doing your paperwork by yourself. You would have somebody go with you to a call, but if it was your call, you did everything yourself. When you transition over to that flex team, it was a group effort. It was like, hey, we might have made this traffic stop and things came from that traffic stop, but it was, hey, I'll go do the arrest report. My buddy on my team, he'll handle the incident report, and then another buddy will do the property sheet and just, you know, speed the whole process up, but work together and get the job completed.
Sweet.
Yeah. Now, how'd you target things? So when you went out, was it just proactive? You just find something, just start like traffic stops, suspicious people, or were you given like, hey, this week we're going to focus on because we got a crack problem or we got a dope problem or a street problem? I mean, how did you guys work those assignments?
A little bit of both. The intelligence-based policing mindset was being implemented and coming to light with us at the time. So it wasn't just cast a net and see what we caught. It was, hey, we know these are issues. We know certain individuals are causing issues. Address those issues.
Well, that was good. At least it gives you a direction, right? So at least you know you're not just out there driving around going, what do we do next? Right now you've got a good thing. So when did the bug for detective, was that a natural thing for you or how did that come about?
Transition from flex to that. So with those targeted, I don't want to say targeted, but with those
directed
directed policing through the intelligence gathering, you know, what comes from that? You're catching somebody with narcotics on them. You're learning how to write search warrants. You're learning how to do seizures. You're learning how to actually take a proactive event or arrest and build that into a case. So I kind of got my feet wet with that and learning things through trial and error. Had a bunch of cases get dismissed because I made mistakes, but I learned from them. And that was seen. The drive to learn all that was kind of seen and picked up to where I was then asked to go to our CSU team, which was our crime suppression unit at Midtown, which in layman's terms was a plainclothes street level narcotics unit at the precinct level. So that was like my first step into becoming a detective. Still a transition or a lateral move, not a promotion.
What kind of shifts did you work?
So I went from, at that point, you know, working on flex on midnights, I then got transferred over to CSU, and that was more of an afternoonish. We usually started around 10 o'clock, give or take, and was off by around 6 or 7, depending on if somebody had to do, if somebody's case made us stay late or anything like that. And that's when the shift changing, you know, on a day-to-day basis kind of came into play, where I had to be a little bit more flexible with it, but that was a fun time.
So, because what we want to do is save some time to talk about, obviously, getting to March 27th, 2023. So how long did it take before you became a real full-fledged, you know, shield-carrying detective?
Let's say 2013 to 2018, so about 4.5, 5 years.
I was going to help you with math. You were struggling with it.
I don't want to misquote it.
All right. So, but is that a pretty fast track for Metro?
It's average.
Okay.
It's average.
So what was your first assignment? What unit did you go into as a detective? Same thing, narcotics?
Yes, street level narcotics. That's kind of been my role.
What kind of problems, what kind of issues are you dealing with there in Nashville Metro these days? What's the scourge?
I'll tell you. So as time progressed with the department, I'm now a part of our Special Investigations Division with our Neighborhood Safety Unit. And now we primarily focus on overdoses, whether it be retroactive or proactive. And I think that goes to say we're having the same issues that every city in the United States is having with just opiate overdoses out just skyrocketing. I remember when I came on the department, heroin wasn't a big thing. It was there, but it's not like it is now. Heroin and fentanyl are just all over the place. And that's our major issue right now.
I'll tell you, living in Loudoun County, and I hate to mention it, Murph, because you and I talked about this when we had the kid that was arrested for the sexual assaults. Yep. Well, this new, quote, superintendent they got has been covering up poisonings of kids at the high schools. And it took Mike Chapman releasing a press release before the parents found out that kids were getting fentanyl in the high schools. They actually, on one girl, they had to use Narcan 4 times to revive her.
No shit. That just sounds so typical Loudoun. You know, thank God for Mike Chapman. Mike, just so you know, Mike Chapman's a retired DE agent who's the sheriff of Loudoun County, Virginia.
Just reelected for his fourth term, I believe.
Fourth term, yeah. Fantastic guy.
But this has been a focus on fentanyl, like you said. I mean, everybody's getting hit with it out here. Nobody is immune. And most of these poisonings are happening from just somebody taking a quarter or a half of a pill. And I'm trying to tell people, I mean, I say I don't use the word overdose because overdose makes it seem like, well, hey, if I just use less of it or if I moderate, I'll be safe. It'll be okay. And it's like this stuff, as you know, too, it's like 1/4 of a pill laced with fentanyl, kill you dead. It doesn't take very much fentanyl to kill these people.
Well, I think one of the issues that we also see is people just don't know what they're taking.
Bingo.
We've seen that plenty of times where somebody goes to and I'm not saying them doing this is right or wrong. Everyone's going to do what they're going to do. But if somebody goes to buy, and I'm just throwing this out there, and I'm not saying this is a true story in any way, but if a kid says they want to, I don't even want to say kid loosely, college student says they want to go to a party, a rave party, and they want to go get some ecstasy to go to that rave party, and they go and purchase it, there's a high probability right now what they went to purchase is not what they got.
Mm-hmm.
And then they ultimately take the wrong substance, and it that's what kills them.
That's like you said, it's everywhere.
And you know the hardest thing I learned, I had to learn in law enforcement, especially as a trooper, the worst news you can ever give is to go knock on somebody's door at 2 o'clock in the morning, you're there in uniform, and they know it's never good news. And you have to deliver the news that, hey, whether it was an accident, a shooting, a homicide, you know, whatever it was, that somebody has died. That to me is one of the worst things I think I ever had to do. 1 week I had to deliver 4 death notifications. And it's like, you know, it just, people don't realize how that, just the impact that has, you know, when you got to deliver the worst news a parent's probably ever going to get in their life. So on that note, let's move on to, we don't want to go down too dark of a rabbit hole here. But
anyway. Yeah, I was going to say, no, because that's another, like you said, though, that's another aspect that's forgotten in our world, if you want to say that, or in this job, in this line of work, the constant of having to make those notifications or go to these calls. I mean, that's not talked about enough.
Right. And it's a mental health issue. I mean, there's a reason why suicide kills more cops than line of duty deaths does. By far and away, orders of magnitude, at least 3 or 4 times more people commit suicide than die from line of duty each year. And I don't think, to your point, I don't think we talk about it enough, but that's a perfect setup for what we want to talk about here, because this gets into now, let's start setting the stage for March 27th, 2023. And it's not that, it has not been that long. It's only been 8 months. But let's talk about your day, right? So where were you working? What were you doing? Let's kind of start setting the stage for that day.
So I was still at Midtown, was still working at the precinct level. Had just started our shift. That was when I say just start our shift, we were at the office. It was me, Sergeant Mathis, who was my supervisor for our team at the time, Detective Cagle, Detective Plessy, Detective Stratton, and Detective Wagner. We were all in our office. We had just started our shift.
What time did you guys start?
So again, it was kind of that flexible. We were on paper working at 10 o'clock to 6:30 at night, but it was nothing if we came in at 8 a.m. because somebody had something going on, or we came in a little bit later to rotate or to push our shift back because we had something later that night. But I want to say around on that day, I think we all kind of trickled in the office around 9:30-ish, but our shift was slotted to start at 10 that day, and that's kind of around the time when all this kicked off. But we were all in the office. I want to say, you know, one or two had some administrative stuff they had to take care of, like getting things ready for court. I know Detective Wagner, who plays a big role in what happened that day. He was going through a pilot program with our department with these license plate readers. And he had the equipment on his car, and it was malfunctioning. Technical issues were going on. So he ultimately was planning on going down to the garage to get it worked on when all that happened. But yeah, we were just in the office. I mean, I think I was typing up an email. We had done a proffer a couple of days prior, and Detective Stratton being new to our team, I was trying to help him learn some things. Had asked Sergeant Mathis if I could send the notes from the proffer to him to try to work on, and was typing all that up when the call went out on the radio.
So tell us about that. So with where you're at, and you said that was Midtown, right?
Yes.
How far away are you from Covenant, the Covenant School?
A couple of miles. So Midtown Precinct was located at and I know I'm saying this and people are going to be like, where? It's kind of just on the outskirts of downtown, on the outskirts of the Gulch area. So 12th Avenue South and Wedgewood is where Midtown Precinct's located. Just a little bit outside of downtown, but far enough out that you're able to get places a whole lot easier than dealing with the downtown traffic, we'll say.
Yeah. Is that close to Berry Hill?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
And were you guys, was this considered like an offsite? Was this an undercover location, or was this a standard police location?
Standard police location.
Okay.
Police precinct, just marked up clear as day as a police precinct where anybody could walk in and out, file a report if they needed, and kind of where we were all, if you want to say, housed at.
Okay. So now when you say the call went out, so let's talk about that. You're sitting there and, you know, a lot of times there's this, did I hear what I just heard? So tell us about the call. How did the call come out? What did you hear where you were sitting at?
So for those that also don't know, with law enforcement, we have 10 codes that all mean certain things. We, in our department, we also have thousand codes. The thousand codes are major incidences, whether it's a bomb, whether it's a plane crash, a train derailment, a riot, one of them being a active aggressor is what it's classified as. That thousand code went off on the radio. So radio sitting on the desk, radio goes off. We hear a certain chime. I think we all know. You hear those bells go off on the radio. It gets everybody's attention. With all of our precincts, with our eight precincts, every precinct has its own radio channel, plus a countywide radio channel. So there's 10 channels that anybody can be on at any time. When that all airs is what we call it. When that chime goes off, it takes all radio channels, stops all of it, and dispatch takes it over. And dispatch put out that 10 code or that 1,000 code for the active aggressor.
What is the 1,000? What was the 1,000 code?
It's a 9,000. So each one, like a 2,000, is a plane crash. I mean, I'll tell you, these big events rarely ever happen. So when you hear them, you tone in. But when that 1,000 code went out, it was we heard it go. Not they put the 9,000 out. They put the address out. They gave the title of the school, and that it was in Midtown. So, I mean, like every other officer, every other detective, every person within our agency that was on that radio that day and that was working that day, when they heard that go out and they heard the call text that was coming in, we just took off running. We ran to our cars, jumped in our cars, and took off.
So those, is all your gear in the car, or do you have to grab some stuff with you on the way out?
So I primarily, along with all the other detectives that were with us that day, we keep it all in the vehicle. Usually I'll bring my radio in just so we can monitor the radio while we're in the office doing some administrative stuff. And that's kind of what happened that day. Heard it go out, grabbed the radio, and just took off running.
Now, when you say all officers respond, are units that are working specific beats or whatever you call them, zones, do they have to maintain certain presence in those zones, or does like the whole city converge?
I'll tell you, on that day, there's no, I don't want to say there's no rules, but it's everyone's going. What matters at that moment in time is stopping the threat and stopping that from continuing. So you might be the closest officer, but in a different precinct. You know, we have, you know, each precinct has its border roads. Like we were making fun of Mercer Road earlier. That's one of our borders. That's the border between Midtown, Hermitage, and South. So this call might be in Midtown, but a South officer might be closer. So again, all rules are off and everyone's going.
So before we go any farther, let's back up for just a minute and let's talk about this, because and I know we had the advantage of talking to you and Rex down there, but let's talk about the training, because a lot of times you train for stuff, right? Let's talk about what kind of training you received on active situations. You call them active aggressors, because it could be more than just a gun. It could be a vehicle. It could be a knife. And sorry, he's sitting outside at a Starbucks.
So. Yeah, I was going to say, I apologize on that. Somebody with an exhaust leak.
Hey, why don't you text us the location? Because if shots are fired, we want to be able to call in.
I'll be okay.
Okay. So, but let's talk about the training you received prior to that, because I know we know after Columbine, they started rethinking their, you know, they started rethinking their strategies about going in, right? It's no longer like, hey, we're going to wait and try to get people together. It's like you go to war with what you have. So tell us about the training you received.
So you remember that comment I made at the beginning of this about how Metro just kind of stuck out to me? This was one of those that stuck out, the training. Metro National Police Department emphasizes training as best they can. I mean, they hold in-house training as much as they can, and they allow us to go wherever, as long as it's a reputable company, to train, whether it's free or we had to pay. There's allotted allowances for officers to go to training. But I want to say the first time I got introduced to anything related to an active aggressor would have been around 2013, 2014. Our SWAT guys started the program within our department, seeing the need for it, like off of the incidents that's happened in the past, saw the need that this needs to be taught. And they took it upon themselves to go to the department and say, hey, here's what we need to start implementing. And those guys did a phenomenal job teaching to the entire department. You're talking 30, 40 guys and girls having to come and teach up to 1,500 officers as quickly as possible. And Sorry, another car drove by. Trying to teach 1,500 officers a bare bones, if anything, how to address the situation if it came about. I mean, they laid that foundation. And I'll tell you, when after the incident, I mean, I called each one of them and spoke with them and just thanked them. I couldn't thank them enough for them laying that foundation towards us.
Some of it's tactics, right? But some of it's mental too, right? So yes. What's the difference? What's the preparation for both, for the tactics and as well as the mental part?
I mean, that's tough. I'll tell you, they brought up the mental side of it too when they taught us the tactical things. And they told us, like, hey, you know, you have to do a self-evaluation. You have to be able to look at yourself in the mirror and say, can I, one, physically and mentally handle this? And, you know, that was stress to us. And I mean, when they talked about it, that hit home with me. And I just felt like, because of them laying that foundation, that's what helped out.
Well, the reason I bring that up, and this is going to factor in later, because at this point, you're a father, you've got one on the way, you've already got one child, right? And now you're going to a school shooting. And one of the things you got to prepare for, right, you have to know in your mind, is that you may encounter, if it's an active aggressor and shots are being fired, you're going to encounter potentially bodies.
Yeah, that was tough. That was tough. That had its I was as prepared as I could have been. Our department did a great job with that, prepping for situations like this, being proactive on the mental health aspect. But as much as you can prep somebody, you're never going to be fully prepared. It was tough, but the community, the family, the leadership, all of it is what's helped push through all that.
Yeah. Well, so let's go back then and start from that. Let's start the clock again and talk about you're running to your car. Because the one thing I wanted to ask you about is, we get a lot of this incident captured on body cams, and normally you don't think detectives are walking around with body cams stuffed on their shirt, right? So is this something that department policy you had on your vest? Because it looks like you threw on a vest too, right?
Yeah, so the way our policy is, as a plainclothes, I don't want to say undercover, I want to say more of a covert, we were authorized to not wear a body cam if we're doing anything in a covert or undercover capacity. When our vest goes on, our body cam goes on, is basically the easy way to say that.
I was going to say, I read also that you were a SWAT paramedic. Is that right?
So I am one of our department medics. I went through the fire department, National Fire Department, myself, and I want to say probably about 10 other officers, detectives have gone through it, where we have now received our EMT license, and we're allowed to be EMTs on the department. You know, we do our helo stuff, we do the boat operations, we do all of it as the department medic.
So so let's talk about that now. You're hopping into the car. What, just start, you know, take the story from there. So you're running out, you're hopping into the car, obviously shit hits the fan, you know, and everybody's responding. Just take it from there.
So ran to the car. Everybody else in the office is running. Jump in, and I mean, it's just get there as quick as you can. I mean, I'm driving a little Toyota Camry at the time, and it's a little hybrid, and I just it couldn't go fast enough. I remember, I drove.
Did you have lights or sirens?
Yeah, so I have two little lights in the front, or I did when I had that car. Two little lights in the front, two little lights in the back, and a siren that anybody could barely hear. And I'm just laying on the horn whenever I could. But I'm flying as fast as I can to get there, along with every other officer in our department. It'd almost be like if you sat on the top of a hill and you just look, you would just see a sea of blue lights and red lights just flying to this one point. Is the best way to describe it. But another officer actually got there before me, Officer Gene Davis. He was our traffic officer at Midtown. But as we're going, and I'm trying to get there, got it typed into my GPS. I'm following the route that says this is the quickest way to get there. I hear Officer Davis key up on the radio. I hear him say he's on scene. That entire time, though, while I'm driving, our dispatchers funnel in all that information from the individuals that are inside the school that are calling. They're putting out as much information as they can over the radio. The radio's silent outside of dispatch because you're trying to collect as much as you can before getting there. I hear Officer Davis get on scene, and you know my heart stops, my heart drops because I know he's there and he's by himself. But at the same time, we know that the kids, the teachers, the employees of the school, people visiting the school, they're in there by themselves. So I know Officer Davis is doing what he can. And all that's going in my mind is get there to him, to help him, help them. Just couldn't get there fast enough. I remember at a certain point when I heard him key up, I looked at my phone and I just grabbed it and I looked and I was like, how far am I? I look and I'm like a mile out and I'm pedal to the metal. I remember smelling the brake fade, the burning of the brakes on this little Camry. I'm like, nah, I mean, it is what it is. If my brakes go out, I'll roll up there. I sent a text to my wife because, you know, I hate to say we do get those false calls sometimes where, you know, a bank robbery where somebody tripped the alarm on accident. You get those. When this call happened and these calls came in, we knew this wasn't a fake call. We knew this was real. I knew I was getting close and there was a high probability I'll be the next officer to get to Davis. So I just sent a quick text while driving. And I'm sorry I did that policy-wise with our department, but I'll take that because I wanted to get a message out to my wife. That's, you know how I said earlier too, like one of the regrets that I had, that's another regret. I didn't say what I should have said.
What do you mean by that?
I sent a message just saying we have an active shooter. And that's what I text her. If things
what you want to say?
I wanted to just say, how hard was it for me to say I love you in that if something were to happen? If this was the last message that my wife was going to receive, I'm upset with myself that I didn't say something different. That's just one of those things.
You had a lot on your freaking mind about that time. I've been in a lot of shootings. I never make sure the door's closed over here because my wife's in the house while we're doing this recording. I never thought about giving her a call. You know, I don't know why. I guess I just get focused on one thing. It's hard to multitask sometimes, but. You had a lot on your freaking mind there.
Yeah, just still that's going to go down as one of those.
That's probably your wife texting you right there.
She's like, "I hear you talking about me." Yeah. They always know. They always know.
Yeah, they know. Hey, well, look, but that's something you're going to deal with later, right? Because one of the things cops are good at doing, whether people like it or not, you got to have the ability to compartmentalize.
Yeah, 100%.
It's like, okay, I got to deal with it,
yeah,
right?
So there's other people. I have to put my needs aside.
Hey players, that is the end of part one. Part two comes out, as always, on Tuesday. In the meantime, go check us out at Game of Crimes on Twitter, at Game of Crimes Podcast on Facebook and the Instagram. Also, go check out our website, gameofcrimespodcast.com. We've got a lot more information there, including our book list. Any book written by our guests will be listed there. In the meantime, go check us out also, patreon.com/gameofcrimes. It's where we put a lot more content you won't hear on our regular podcast. We go into a lot more topics, and folks, it is a lot of fun. So go check us out, patreon.com/gameofcrimes. In the meantime, everybody stay safe. We'll see you tomorrow for part two.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.